This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll talk to the Texas Scorecard Bureaus about a land grab in the Metroplex, the Sanctuary Cities Law being in court, and a new entrant into the race for Texas House Speaker. We'll interview Joanne Fleming and talk about the grassroots fighting back in East Texas. And we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. Welcome back to Texas Scorecard Radio. This is your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. We'll get started talking to the Texas Scorecard Bureaus. We'll start with Aaron Anderson with the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Bureau. Aaron, you've been doing some articles about land grabs that are going on in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's right, Tony. In cities around the Metroplex, Weatherford, McKinney, Mesquite, cities are looking to grab up land by using what's called forced annexation, annexing people into the city limits who don't really want to be part of cities.
And this issue is being impacted by some legislation that was passed during the most recent special session, Senate Bill 6. So how is the legislation and the changes in the law, how is that impacting this fight between citizens who don't want to be annexed and these local governments who want to grab them up?
That's right, Tony. Special session law SB 6 reformed the annexation procedures to say that certain cities will have to get the landowner's permission before they can annex them. But the law, because it was passed in the special session, won't go into effect until December 1st. So it's really a race against the clock, both for these cities that are trying to annex as much land as they can without having to ask the landowner's permission, and for those landowners who are trying to fight back and at least get to have a say in whether or not they're put into those city limits and into city taxes and regulations.
And so we have the citizens on one hand saying, hey, just let the law go into effect. This is what the legislature wanted. Let us vote. And the local governments are saying, you know, hey, we don't want to let you vote.
That's right. They haven't had to in the past. And the mayor of McKinney actually said that if they let the people vote, they won't want to choose to join the city of McKinney. So that was a kind of telling.
So how are the citizens fighting back?
Well, citizens are joining together, for one thing, organizing, sharing their stories. They're looking to get some legal advice, but really they're showing up at the city council meetings, at the public hearings, and telling their stories, explaining to these officials what the impact is going to be, both on the people being annexed, becoming from county to city residents, and on the current city residents who are going to have to bear the financial burden of adding all these new properties and providing city services to them.
So I expect this will continue to gear up and flame up as we get headed towards December 1st. I look forward to more reporting from you, Aaron, about this. I'm sure there's a lot more that's going to take place. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
Next up, we'll talk to Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Carrie, you're on the program to tell us about State Representative Phil King running for Speaker of the Texas House. Tell us, who is Phil King and why should voters care about the Speaker of the House?
Thanks, Tony. So State Representative Phil King is a state lawmaker from Parker and Wise counties. And for Texans who don't know where those are, they're two kind of rural or suburban counties just west of Fort Worth. And as to your further question, why should Texans care? It's because the Speaker of the Texas House has a lot of control over the Texas legislature. He's the highest officer in the Texas House and does a lot to control the flow of legislation in that chamber. If you want conservative legislation to move through, you kind of need a conservative Speaker of the Texas House. If you want that same legislation to die, you need a liberal Speaker of the Texas House.
And that's the situation we have now. The current House Speaker, Joe Strauss, state representative out of San Antonio, has been in office since 2009, and he's kind of built a coalition with the Democrats to oppose conservative legislation. Tell listeners a little more about that situation.
Sure, Tony. So as you mentioned, Joe Strauss is a kind of metropolitan Republican from a rich little suburb in San Antonio named Alamo Heights, and he came to power as part of this small coalition government of liberal Republicans working with Democrats to take control of the chamber from a conservative Republican speaker. And since then, he's been a barrier to conservative reform for Republicans of all stripes.
So what's the significance of King getting in the race? What kind of change could this represent?
Sure. Great question, Tony. So King's entrance into the race, I think, is a sign that there's blood in the water. There's a sign that the Strauss coalition government that was holding together for so long is starting to fall apart. And we've seen this movement in the Republican caucus to try and elect the Republican speaker internally, where only Republicans get to decide, where Republicans would caucus internally and by majority vote choose the nominee of the party and then all commit to voting for that nominee on the floor of the Texas House.
And so this would kind of cut the Democrats out of the process and unite the power amongst the Republicans, presumably get rid of Democrat committee chairs, those kind of things. When do you think this will actually get resolved? When will we know what's happening?
Sure. So that it ultimately won't be resolved until not this coming January, but the one after in January 19, when legislators actually get to vote on this issue. But we should see this caucus question start to be resolved very, very quickly. There was a working group appointed at the last caucus meeting, and we're starting to see positive traction on that. It's kind of a quickly developing thing. I think we ought to see something before Christmas on that.
Well, we'll have to have you back as that continues to develop, as maybe other candidates for speaker get in the race as well.
Absolutely, Tony. You know, this is going to take over 15 months from now until when legislators are actually going to vote. And we probably expect a number of other candidates to enter the field as well.
Thanks for that report, Kerry.
Thanks.
Next, we'll turn to Sal Ayala with Texas Scorecard. Sal, you just recently posted an article about Senate Bill 4 in court. Tell listeners, what is Senate Bill 4?
Thanks, Tony. Hey, so Senate Bill 4 is a bill passed by the legislature during this most recent 85th session. And basically what it does is it requires local law enforcement to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. So what we've seen is we've seen a spate of local law enforcement officials refusing to enact or refusing to cooperate and comply with federal immigration law and detainer requests.
These are what are called sanctuary cities, setting up sanctuary city policies in these local areas and refusing to cooperate in the enforcement of federal immigration law.
That's right. And in the process of refusing to comply with these immigration laws and rules, we've seen people like Travis County Sheriff Sally Hernandez flout immigration law in that she's not complying with most of the immigration detainers, or at least some of them, and the result of those is that you have criminal illegals going back on the streets and perpetuating more crimes against Texas citizens.
So it's kind of a safety issue. People are upset that there are these people who really shouldn't be in the country in the first place, and then in particular, some of them are criminals, and they're being let go because of these policies that are being set up at the local level, and then SB 4 is kind of the legislature's answer to say, hey, enough of that. So why is, how did this thing end up in court? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so initially the bill itself and the law was challenged in district court, in U.S. District Court, and it was ruled by a judge named Orlando Garcia, who blocked five provisions of SB 4. So what the state did is it came in and it appealed the injunction and attempted to stay some of those injuncted provisions of the law.
So this was what the hearing was about, is you had a stay proceeding about this injunction at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. This is in New Orleans. So how did it turn out? What have we found out?
Sure. So like I mentioned, there were five provisions that were ruled either completely enjoined or partially enjoined. And what the Fifth Circuit did was it overturned most of those, except what it left in place in terms of the injunction were minor issues such as, you know, defining things like what it means to materially limit the enforcement of immigration policy. So it just kind of turns on a lot of the verbiage and the words of the law itself. But most of it will go into effect after this ruling.
Yeah, so big picture is the law is going into effect. And of course, now kind of where this is headed, it's going to trial there in San Antonio. That won't resolve for a couple of years. But in the meantime, the law will be more or less in place to stop local governments from, you know, obstructing immigration law.
That's correct. And this appeal on the injunction is not finished either. It's going to go forward on the merits, and the panel of judges in the Fifth Circuit will decide matters that they didn't adjudicate in this preliminary stuff that we are seeing right now.
Great. Well, thank you, Sal, for that report. Listeners who want to learn more, Sal's got a great article up at TexasScorecard.com. Thanks for being on the program, Sal.
No problem, Tony. Thanks.
Well, it's great to have this week on the program Joanne Fleming with Grassroots America, We the People, one of the biggest and strongest conservative grassroots organizations in the state. Great to have you on the program, Joanne.
Thanks, Tony. I've just, you know, been excited about doing this. Grateful that you asked.
Well, I wanted to have you on to talk about the event you had this past weekend, big gathering there in Tyler with Ted Cruz in, with the Freedom Caucus, the conservative legislators from the Texas House. Tell us about the event. What was the event, and was it a success?
Well, yes. In fact, it was a great success. This is our fifth annual Champions of Freedom Awards dinner, where we recognize people that we believe are, you know, doing the hard work and the heavy lifting of conservatism in the state of Texas. We've been around since 2009, but we first started our dinners in 2013. So this was the fifth one, and we were honoring the Texas Freedom Caucus because we believe that they helped us turn a corner in Texas legislative history, and we believe that they actually are helping us reach a tipping point in the Texas House. So we wanted to be sure that we supported them, that we showcased them. We also had Senator Ted Cruz in, and we had Jeremy Dice as well from First Liberty to talk to us about the outstanding work that First Liberty is doing in protecting religious liberty.
Yeah, and First Liberty, great organization. Used to be, was Liberty Institute and Free Market Foundation before that, a great organization of lawyers. Not all lawyers are bad. There's some good lawyers out there. I like to count myself included. But fighting for civil liberties, First Amendment, and then they have focused kind of exclusively on religious liberty now. But I wanted to talk about the Texas Freedom Caucus. Tell listeners, who is the Texas Freedom Caucus? Who are these legislators, and what makes them worthy of accolades?
Well, the Texas Freedom Caucus, formed soon after the legislative session began, and it's 12 members. Matt Schaefer is the chairman. Bill Zedler is the vice chair. Tony Tenderholtz is the secretary treasurer. Jeff Leach is the policy director. Matt Shaheen is the grassroots liaison, and those are followed up by State Representative Kyle Biederman, Briscoe Kane, Matt Krause, Mike Lane, Matt Rinaldi, Jonathan Sticklin, and Valerie Swanson. And these 12 came together this session really to battle the nonsense that happens out of the speaker's office and the speaker's lieutenants that, you know, try to gum up the works and keep conservative reforms from passing in the House. And, you know, they've been very successful in doing that. You know, we've started saying that you can count on the Texas Senate under the leadership of Governor Patrick to make it, to advance and to move forward and with the strongest kinds of conservative reforms. But you can also count on Joe Strauss and his lieutenants to weaken it down, to render those legislative priorities of conservatives to be weak and useless and actually end up killing conservative reform. So, you know, the Freedom Caucus was put together, though, for the purpose of magnifying the voice of the grassroots.
Yeah,
the Texas conservative grassroots.
Yeah, this is a scene we've seen develop over, you know, several sessions now, over a decade really now, but really come into focus over the last two legislative sessions there in the Texas House, the Texas Senate, since 2015. You have the election of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a conservative senator, and you have a kind of a changeover in the Senate of conservative senators who want to advance Republican Party platform principles. And then they're being kind of stymied by leadership in the House of a liberal Republican, House Speaker Joe Strauss out of San Antonio, his lieutenants, and they are obstructing and killing, you know, conservative reforms, property tax reform, spending limits, those sort of things. And then I guess what we've seen this session here is the Freedom Caucus come about to say, you know, hey, we're going to align ourselves with the grassroots, like, you know, like your organization, and the views and the things that you all want to see done in Austin. And they saw a lot of success this session. What was your take on their success during the legislative session?
Well, you know, they brought to the forefront the parliamentary. They challenged the parliamentary procedures that Joe Strauss and Byron Cook and Charlie Guerin and all of their cohorts used to hide behind. You know, they challenged them from the floor. They got the speaker on record actually several times looking as if he didn't know exactly how to respond to them and how to answer. And you could see over time, whether it was from the outstanding work that they did to advance and actually pass a strong sanctuary cities ban, you know, you could see the speaker losing control of House members, of Republican House members, because, you know, Tony, we believe that as conservative reforms, if we can ever get them to the floor of the Texas House, they will be supported. And one of the reasons why is because every Republican who runs for the Texas House runs as a conservative. Nobody runs as some wild-eyed liberal rhinocrat that wants to, you know, keep property taxes high, you know, steal your liberty. They don't run on those things. They run as conservatives. But when they get to Austin, they believe that the Austin swamp will help cover their dastardly deeds. And so what the Freedom Caucus has done is they challenged that openly on the floor. And they've raised the debate to a level where now we have an emphasis on conservative principles and those things that are found in the Republican Party platform. You know, I always say these aren't some wild ideas from some intergalactic zip code.
These
are things that conservative mainstream Republicans want to see happen.
Yeah, there's so many parallels at the state government level and really the local government level to some extent, but at the state level government level, a lot of parallels to what goes on in Washington. People know, you know, D.C. is a swamp, that there are kind of corrupt special interests who pull the strings, that you have all of these politicians who run for office telling people things they want to hear and then get to Washington and do the exact opposite of what they said they would do, or do nothing at all, or enrich themselves or what have you. The same problem, we see the same problem here in Austin, in Texas.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons why is we have some people who run as Republicans, and I call them big government Republicans. And when you let them get into office, they will soon show you that they like big government just as long as they can be in charge of it.
Right.
So those are not the kinds of Republicans that we want to see in office. We want to see those in office that are actually going to put to practice those conservative principles of limited government that we all say we believe in. And so that's what we've tried to do this year, Tony. We've tried to coalesce the Texas grassroots leaders, whether they be from the Tea Party, local Tea Party groups, to SREC members, to conservative GOP county chairs, the conservative Republican club leaders. We've tried to unite people around these conservative reforms and build a coalition of leaders who all speak out in unison about issues, you know, that are grounded in conservative principles. Because if we unite around principles, then we get away from these iconic kind of personality types that over time, you know, human beings just let you down, but conservative principles won't. That's what we've tried to do, is to focus on principles and give even the smallest group a voice inside the Capitol.
Yeah, that's the point that I think you're making there is, you know, these aren't niche issues. There's wide, broad support for conservative reforms, and you're able to see coalitions where, you know, there are different organizations, whether it's, you know, a homeschool group or a pro-gun group or a pro-life group or a fiscal policy group like Empower Texans or a Tea Party organization or your grassroots organization. These organizations all coming together to say, hey, we're, you know, 90%+ of the time all on board together, mm-hmm. and we want to say we're united as a coalition to ask for these reforms and to demand these reforms because, again, you know, we're always say it on this program, the politicians are the servants. We're the masters. We're the ones who are supposed to be calling the shots. But if we don't get out there and make the demand, you know, what else should we expect to happen?
Well, that's absolutely true. And you know, I find, too, that conservatives get so frustrated because they feel like, you know, they go to meetings and they hear information, they don't know what to do with it. And, you know, humans are not hamsters. I mean, you know, humans don't like to feel like they're on a hamster wheel and they're constantly running, but they never see any results. And so what we've tried to do this year is to get people to look united around principles and putting our voice together, we can actually achieve some very important legislative priorities. And if we don't achieve, if we're not successful with every single one of them, guess what? Our voice is getting louder down there. So if you look at the rise of the Texas Conservative Grassroots Coalition coming together and growing, by the way, 85% since January, if you watch that parallel as we go along with the Texas Freedom Caucus, you will see that those are that's a powerful combination there. And you know, Counselor, if we can have some successes at the ballot box this time, and we can actually fire some of these rhinocrats that have helped Joe Strauss and his lieutenants gum up the works, then we can have added voices down there to the Freedom Caucus who will call for reforms and actually hold these Republicans accountable for what they promised the people.
See, and that's right. It is ultimately, you know, it's about the policy successes, seeing the things we want done, but that happens through being engaged in the election process. The Freedom Caucus, you know, doesn't just exist out of, it wasn't a magic, it's not a miracle that, you know, there's some good guys just happen to get together and start fighting back against the corruption in Austin. I mean, you elected some of these guys. You helped, you know, get a Matt Schaefer, who's the leader of the Freedom Caucus, elected right there from Tyler. So, you know, you played a role in that success. And I think I'm hearing you that, you know, we're going to have some more success headed into this upcoming, you know, we call it election season. Sometimes we call it accountability season. What do you think our prospects are as conservatives, as grassroots, to see some success headed into this next election cycle?
Well, I think we have a lot of opportunities here because not only do we have some challengers that will be coming up to run against some of the rhinocrats, or a shorthand way of saying it, are F-rated Republicans. They fail on every credible conservative scorecard in the state of Texas. And so we're going to have challengers, and I think we'll be seeing some more as we move forward. I think Hurricane Harvey, and I think the devastation down south there has kind of, you know, quieted a little bit. People are wanting to be respectful of the recovery efforts and everything. And so I think that is just kind of, you know, muted some of the challenges that will be coming forward. However, there's another way that we've already seen some success. We've seen some rhinocrats that simply are not going to run for office again. I'll give you a great example would be Larry Phillips. Now, you know, Larry Phillips will be back, I suspect, as a big government lobbyist.
As they always do.
As they always do. So we won't be rid of them, but at least they will be out of, we have removed them from being able to vote. And so what we've got to do is we've got to have a standard measuring stick for everyone. If we make sure even those legislators that we may personally like, if you don't hold them to the same standards that you would any, you know, C-rated Republican, you've got to use the same measuring stick for everyone or you will lose your own credibility. So, you know, I always remind people that we're hiring people at the ballot box to do a job, just like you would for your own business. And if they don't do that job, you need to find someone else who will.
I couldn't. So, that's great. I couldn't say it better myself. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the program, Joanne. Tell folks who are listening where they can learn more about your organization.
Well, they can go to our website at grassrootsamericawethepeople.com, and they can find out all the ways that they can follow us on social media as well. We have a listing of our meetings and our special events there right on the homepage. So GAWPP.com, Grassroots America, We the People.
Thank you so much, Joanne. It's a privilege to be in the fight with you. Thank you for being on the program. Look forward to having you on as campaign season heats up.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Last up, we have a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. You know, the political establishment is on the run in Alabama. Michael will tell us why that matters for Texas voters.
My favorite map of the United States shows the nation consisting of two places, Texas and not Texas. I have to confess that too often I dismiss the political happenings in not Texas as being, well, not Texas. But some events demand to be noticed. Hi, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with today's commentary. Republican primary voters in Republican-dominated Alabama were recently tasked with replacing their U.S. Senator in a special election, filling the unexpired term of Jeff Sessions, who resigned to accept appointment as President Trump's Attorney General. Alabama's governor had appointed as the interim senator Luther Strange, who had been the state's Attorney General. By every possible measure, Strange was a conservative, but one with a fatal flaw. As an appointee into the D.C. swamp, Strange was supported by U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who's become incredibly unpopular with the GOP's base of conservatives. Even an endorsement by President Trump himself couldn't help Strange. Instead, Strange was defeated by Roy Moore, a renegade conservative who made an international name for himself as a district judge and later on Alabama's Supreme Court by refusing to follow unconstitutional federal judicial dictates. There are a couple lessons to draw from their election results. First, the D.C. GOP establishment is even more unpopular than previously thought. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made the race into a referendum on his leadership, and Alabama voters obliged. Luther Strange did himself no favors by allowing the race to become a proxy fight between the grassroots and the establishment. But then it was Strange's decision to allow himself to be identified with the swamp dwellers. Strange learned the lesson of the old proverb, "Bad company corrupts good character." The second lesson is that, contrary to the mainstream media portrayal, Donald Trump supporters don't reflexively back his political decisions. Yes, they support him. No, they won't follow him anywhere. He won Alabama with 62% of the general election vote and endorsed Strange, but that didn't count for much with voters. They saw the Trump endorsement for what it was, the president making a political trade with the GOP establishment and hoping to get something for it. But the voters weren't in the negotiation, and so they voted to drain the swamp again. All of this should offer a serious warning for politicians outside Alabama and right here in Texas. Campaign consultants and the media try to sell candidates on the need to suck up to the establishment. But Luther Strange learned the hard way that voters aren't buying the "important people say I'm a big deal" style of campaigning. Republican primary voters are no longer content with candidates who say they're pro-God, pro-gun, pro-business. They want boldness, not window dressing. Luther Strange may have said all the right things, but Roy Moore proved to voters he does more than talk. Last point. With the Alabama special primary in the rearview mirror, Moore now faces a Democrat in December with a special election. Polls show a tight race because moderate Republicans appear to be leaning towards the Democrat. Think about this. Conservatives are constantly told they have to be the ones to bend for the good of the party and lump a substandard candidate to stop the Democrats. But establishment Republicans feel no such loyalty. Whether it's in Texas or the vast reaches of not Texas, voters want the same thing. Candidates whose loyalty is first and only to them and the Constitution. Not to Mitch McConnell, not to Donald Trump, not to lobbyists, not to party bosses, but to the people. That's how you make America great again. For Texas Scorecard Radio, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I've got for you for this week of Texas Scorecard Radio. As a reminder, you can catch articles from Aaron and Carrie and Sal and all of the other reporters with Texas Scorecard being published daily at texasscorecard.com.
You know, somebody is always keeping score, and at Texas Scorecard, we think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.